He has demonstrated ability in delivering academic success for all children and in doing that in the face of budget cuts.
The Anchorage School District has a new superintendent. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, January 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, public gas line meetings get underway in Fairbanks.
We need to identify where the markets really are going to be most profitable for the sale of an Alaskan resource.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
The Anchorage School Board has selected the new superintendent for the Anchorage School District. The board reviewed more than 150 applications for the position. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Jim Browder will replace retiring Superintendent Carol Como, who served in that role since 2000. School Board President Gretchen Guess made the announcement at district headquarters, saying the board chose Browder because he's aligned with their vision for the district.
The board is very excited to welcome Jim and his wife Beth to Anchorage. He brings an energy and experience to the district that we know will lead to great things. As you know, he has demonstrated ability in delivering academic success for all children and in doing that in the face of budget cuts. He is very aligned with the board and the direction that we're going.
The direction the board is going is to have all students graduate prepared for post-secondary educational and employment opportunities, something the district has struggled with and made a priority in their vision statement. Before selecting Browder, the board spent months on the selection process, sifting through around 150 applications. They eventually narrowed it down to two finalists, Steve Atwater, current superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District in Soldotna, and Browder, former superintendent of Lee County School District in Fort Myers, Florida. Both visited the school district for 3 days in January. Guest says Browder won't officially start until summer, but he'll begin his transition to the job in February with a visit to the district. Then he'll start full-time alongside the current superintendent this spring.
He'll be starting full-time sometime in April with a focus on getting out to all of our schools before the school year ends, meeting with teachers and parents and the community. There's no question and no doubt, though, in the board's mind that Carol's in charge until June 30th. Just to be clear.
Browder has already accepted the job. The outgoing superintendent, Carol Como, says she'll do everything she can to help prepare Browder for his position.
To help educate him about Anchorage, about the state, about programs, about our personnel, about what I think's working really well and how we got there and things I think that we've got to work on.
Browder expressed his enthusiasm about his selection by phone from his current home in Florida.
We talked this morning, we talked last evening, and have worked the discussion, and I'm just delighted that I'm their choice.
He's so delighted because he says the board that hired him knows what they want.
Their vision is very clear in relation to doing what's best for children, including the parents and the community, having a real open and collaborative type work style, assuring that we're on track academically, making sure that we're doing everything we can for taxpayers and assuring that we're being frugal in relation to the dollars that taxpayers give us.
Browder's pay will be $180,000 a year, well below the national average for an urban superintendent, which is $239,000. The outgoing superintendent, Como, is currently paid $165,000. That's the lowest in the nation for an urban district leader. Browder's contract is for 3 years with up to $10,000 for moving expenses. Although he has experience, Browder says his first priority in his new job will be learning about the district.
Listen to the people in the community, to the board, to parents, to employees, and get a real sense of the things that everybody in our community believes we need to do for children.
Browder says his experience in the Lee County School District, the 40th largest in the nation with approximately 82,000 students, will prove valuable in Anchorage. Lee County includes the city of Fort Myers, which has similar demographics to Anchorage, with just under 50% white and the rest students of color or multiracial. And like Anchorage, Browder says, dropout rates were a major concern there. Although Browder says he has a lot to learn about Alaska's unique cultures and challenges, he says he already has a good idea about what he wants to see happen in the district.
I want every youngster to have the ability to graduate from high school. I want every youngster to be able to have the choice of being career or college ready. And those are things we do through aligning our curriculum to making sure that we're teaching the standards that they need to understand in order to be successful on the assessments that they take.
The Anchorage School District is Alaska's largest and most diverse, with approximately 49,000 students speaking more than 90 languages. The new superintendent will supervise around 6,500 employees and manage a budget of more than $800 million a year. He'll start July 1st. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The state Senate is working on getting final plans in order to have a new oil and gas tax bill before the public by the end of next week. President Gary Stevens has said he has no intention of working with the tax rewrite bill the governor introduced and the House passed. This morning, he said he expects to see the fresh bill ready for hearings before the Resources Committee by Friday of next week. He says the goal is to get the measure to the House for consideration at least a month before the end of the session. Anchorage Republican Liesl McGuire is taking charge of rewriting a portion of the bill dealing with progressivity, how tax rates vary as prices rise and fall. She says consultants and drafters are currently working on three different alternatives.
Our strategy at this point, Senator Wagner and I have talked, is to allow the committee to decide. There's a placeholder in the bill, as he just referenced, and so there will be a placeholder for progressivity, but it would be my intent to offer a couple different versions of progressivity to allow the conversation to take place at the Senate Resources Committee.
McGuire says the variable tax rate is the most important element of the bill, since it must encourage development of resources that have already been identified. She says tax credits the state already has in place seem to be encouraging enough new exploration. Finance co-chair Bert Stedman says the bill going to the Resources Committee next week will signal only a starting point. He says when it gets to his committee members, we'll look at two high-profile issues, the effects of progressivity on revenue and the state's use of tax credits.
Clearly, if oil prices go, you know, north of 200, we could be faced with paying over 100% of the capital expenditures in the oil basin. And that is not a position the state of Alaska should be exposed to. So it is it's a balance between how we stimulate capital costs and how our tax structure is on the other end when there's high oil prices.
Stedman said the first goal of the committees is to identify the problems they expect to solve with a new tax structure. He cautioned against dumping solutions on the table before they are needed if members plan to finish work by the scheduled end of the session. Fairbanks was the site of the first in a series of public meetings last night on the proposed gas line from the North Slope to Canada. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is hosting the meetings as part of the scoping process for an environmental impact statement for the Alaska Pipeline Project. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission's scoping meetings are for the big project, the $30 to $40 billion gas line being pursued by TransCanada and ExxonMobil under the state's Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, or AGIA. The companies recently submitted draft reports on expected impacts from construction and operation. FERC Environmental Project Manager Danny LaFoon says the Alaska scoping meetings will round out issues to be pursued in a broad-ranging environmental impact statement.
Geology impacts, soils impacts, land use impacts, economics, socioeconomics, health impacts. So it's much broader than just rivers and water bodies.
Design and permitting for the project is supported by $500 million from the state of Alaska, and LaFoon says getting to the EIS stage is a milestone.
This is the farthest that an interstate gas pipeline, large diameter gas pipeline, has made it.
LeFoon says FERC will ultimately use the information in the EIS to decide whether or not to permit the Alaska Pipeline project. Director of Pipeline and Facilities for the project, Mel Johnson, described the proposed 1,700-mile gas line.
The project will treat, transport, and deliver gas from the Alaska North Slope by pipeline to facilities in Alberta, Canada, whereby it connects with existing pipeline facilities, which will ensure that delivery for Alaskan gas can take place to all markets in North America.
The Alaska portion of the project, including 700 miles of pipeline, compression plants, takeoff points for Alaska communities, a North Slope processing facility, and a connector line to the Point Thompson Field, are covered by the EIS. Johnson said 32,000 acres of land would be impacted by construction of the mostly buried gas line, which will parallel roads including the Dalton, Richardson, and Alaska highways. Turnout was light at Monday's meeting, and only two people spoke during the public comment session. Bob Sattler, an archaeologist and environmental quality analyst with the Tanana Chiefs Conference, said there's nearly universal support for the gas line project in the villages TCC serves, but there are concerns about the EIS process. Sattler said the communities have been involved in pre-scoping meetings for 2 years, but that's not apparent in the draft report submitted by the industry.
Instead, the scale of the socioeconomic report is very broadly based on statewide impacts. At a glance, the subsistence component is extensive, but not enough attention is given to scoping on other potential effects the project poses on the small native communities in the proposed corridor.
The other person to comment at the meeting was Pam Miller, Arctic Coordinator with the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. Miller listed several concerns, including the amount of information withheld from the public in the draft resource reports. Miller stressed the importance of gas as a cleaner burning alternative fuel, but said North Slope gas development will not be without impacts.
Cumulative impacts of the Point Thompson development. There's two parallel processes going on by Exxon, that EIS and this EIS, and how do they mesh? What cumulative impacts with offshore development and neighboring impacts potentially to the Arctic Refuge are involved.
Miller said Alaska gas could be used to develop Canada's oil sands, but FERC's LeFoon confirmed that the AGIA-governed project is required to deliver a full volume of 4.5 billion cubic feet of gas per day to the lower 48. Economics currently don't support that proposition. Independent energy consultant Dennis Whitmer of Fairbanks says the project doesn't pan out based on prices right now.
I looked at the spot market today. It's $2.73 is the Henry Hub price today. And at $2.73, the tariff that was projected is $3.50 just to get it to Canada. So you still have to get it from Canada to Chicago. And $3.50 is more than $2.73, so the gas has a negative value on the North Slope. So today, this project makes absolutely no sense.
Whitmer says the EIS process is still worthwhile because much of the information in it will be valuable to whatever gas line Alaska eventually pursues. Relatively better gas prices in Asian markets have refocused attention on the potential for exporting Alaska gas via tanker out of Valdez or South Central. FERC's LeFoon responded to comments that the AGIA-sponsored line to Canada is not a real project.
This project is definitely taking a lot of effort on our part to review all of the resource reports, and we are seriously looking at this project.
FERC is holding additional gas line EIS scoping meetings in Interior and North Slope communities, as well as Anchorage. Public comment closes February 27th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Kotzebue city officials and the state can't agree on jail funding.
We have made all reasonable attempts to try to work with them to be open on the first, but they don't seem inclined to move forward with that.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by Atwood Foundation and Alaska Children's Trust.
The Kotzebue Regional Jail has been closed since December 1st to all prisoners arrested by state agencies. This is the result of a funding dispute between the City of Kotzebue and the Department of Corrections. The city had hoped to renegotiate its contract with DOC by February 1st, but Kotzebue City Finance Director Keith Green says funding issues continue, and as a result, the jail won't reopen tomorrow.
What we have asked from the beginning is that DOC fund us at a level where we can operate and not have such an impact on the City of Kotzebue's general fund.
Kotzebue Police Chief Craig Motes says the jail will continue to house local prisoners, but it will remain closed to prisoners arrested by state agencies.
The jail that we have still functions at the city level for people arrested, whether it's a misdemeanor or a state crime. What we are not doing is taking state agency arrested prisoners, such as Department of Public Safety, Alaska State Troopers, or adult probation, that type of thing.
Funding for the Kotzebue Jail has been static at an annual $880,000 since 2007. The governor's 2012 proposed budget increases the jail's funding to just more than $944,000. While that does represent an increase in funding, Green says it isn't enough. A city audit for fiscal year 2011 shows jail operating expenses of $1.19 million. With the $944,000 already being used for the 2013 budget, Green says funding will fall well short of what it costs the city to operate the jail.
We have made all reasonable attempts to try to work with them to be open on the first, but they don't seem inclined to move forward that other than a way of saying, here's our agreement, and that's it.
DOC Administrative Services Director Leslie Houston says Kotzebue's audits for the jail differ from their own. Staffing is one area of the jail's budget that Houston says exceeds what DOC is willing to pay.
We pay 100% of the superintendent in Kotzebue's salary and benefits. Then we look at their request to fund their police chief for 50% with benefits as maybe not being as much of an allowable expense.
Until the Kotzebue Jail fully reopens, state agencies will continue transporting prisoners to Nome's Anvil City facility for holding and back to Kotzebue for trial and arraignment. Houston says she doesn't know the costs associated with such transport, but during the Kotzebue Jail's previous closure from 2003 to 2005, the state spent $1.5 million on similar prisoner holding and transport costs. In addition to the funding, Green says there's also an issue of certification. When the city closed the jail in December, he says the facility's certification as a regional jail was pulled. Reopening would mean all liability for prisoners would fall on the City of Kotzebue and not on the Department of Corrections. Houston says DOC will meet with representatives of Kotzebue to discuss the future of the jail on February 7th. The Parnell administration and all three members of the state's congressional delegation were quick to respond to Defense Secretary Leon Panetta's announcement last week that President Obama will seek another round of military base closures. APRN's Steve Heimel reports that the secretary's idea is a non-starter, but there are bound to be Pentagon spending cuts in the future.
Congress has already ordered the Defense Department to plan to cut its spending to 2007 levels starting less than a year from now. Secretary Leon Panetta has responded with plans to reduce forces, the Army by 80,000 troops, the Air Force by 10,000, the Marines by 20,000. He says every state will take a hit. And he says at some point you're just not going to need so many military facilities when you have fewer troops. But on the statewide public radio call-in show Talk of Alaska, Senator Mark Begich said, another round of the Base Realignment and Closure Commission, or BRAC, process is simply not going to happen.
We're not going to see at this point, Steve, to be very frank with you, that Congress, at least the Senate, approving a process for the Pentagon to start a domestic BRAC.
Begich says Alaska's bases are needed, particularly in view of the Pentagon's increased emphasis on the Pacific Rim. Much of the world is within quick reach of troops from Alaska. But the Alaska delegation is gearing up its opposition to any BRAC process just the same. And so is Governor Parnell. The governor's asking the legislature for $300,000 for consultants to beef up the state's lobbying capacities on the issue. Parnell's Washington office director, Kip Knudsen, says this should help him get the message across that Alaska is not the place to cut.
What we're going to do is make our
remind people about our key geopolitical stance. And I think with the help of some very specialized consultants that the governor is interested in hiring, who have worked the base realignment and closure process before, I think we can tell a very good story and just remind people about how key our military infrastructure is.
Senator Biggert says he's not sure that all that much money was saved in the last round of base closings. The process is just finishing up now. And Congress members say the Pentagon needs to look overseas for its next cuts.
Many of us have been asking for us to re-examine our military positioning around the world, not our domestic military bases. And that, to me, is a higher priority.
And the senator can get more specific on exactly where overseas to look, too. And he has, in the form of amendments in the Senate Armed Services Committee.
For the last 2 years in the Armed Services Committee, I've authored amendments that have passed and focused on us realigning in Western Europe. We have two brigades more than we need there. At one point, the administration was opposed to that. Now it looks like they're supportive of that. We have a new military base potentially being built in Guam in the billions.
Biggert says Congress has slowed the process in Guam but not stopped it. Defense analysts believe Secretary Panetta's mention of base closings was basically a maneuver to get Congress's attention focused on the defense items in the budget request the president will make on February 13th. But one way or another, real defense cuts are almost certain in the future. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates 4 decades of dependable financing and competitive interest rates for Alaskans. Find out more by asking your lender or real estate professional how Alaska Housing can assist you with buying a home. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
More than 60% of signatures collected by the group behind a citizens' initiative to revive the Alaska Coastal Management Program have been verified by an initial computer review. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
The Alaska Sea Party submitted more than 33,000 signatures to the State Division of Elections 2 weeks ago in hopes of qualifying the measure for this year's statewide ballot. Division Director Gail Finumiai says computer scanners verified more than 20,000 of those as being from qualified registered voters, leaving more than 12,000 to be verified manually.
It's not uncommon to have a high number of unqualified after the initial computer qualification phase. And what we do with those then is we go back through and we do a manual search for that person in our voter registration system to see if they really are a true qualified voter in the state of Alaska.
Finumiai says a signature may not meet the computer qualification for any number of reasons.
Say they signed a book as Jim Smith and they're really James Smith in the voter registration system. The VR system would not match that because it wasn't an exact name match. It could be somebody signed and put their driver's license down as an identifier, but we don't have their driver's license in our VR system. So we're able to get that information through other means and provide a match and say, yes, this person is a qualified voter.
Finumiai says manual verification of signatures for the Coastal Management Initiative started last Friday. She estimates it will take another 3 to 4 weeks to complete the process. The news that many of the signatures did not pass the initial computer scan led to lots of unnecessary angst amongst lawmakers Tuesday. Senate President Gary Stevens said at a press conference that initiative backers may not have the numbers. But House Minority Leader Beth Kurtula, who's been involved with the Alaska Sea Party's efforts, says the group sees no reason to panic.
We are confident that in those names we'll see yet again many more qualified voters. It's as simple as that.
Lawmakers can bypass the Citizens Initiative by approving substantially similar legislation this session. The House and Senate Judiciary Committees are scheduled to hold a joint hearing on the issue next Monday, February 6th. Until it closed last year, the Alaska Coastal Management Program allowed the state to put conditions on certain development in federal land and waters. It interacted with and received most of its funding through the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act. The program folded after legislators and the Parnell administration failed to reach an agreement to reauthorize it. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Rowan Boozer of Big Lake won the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race, but he's not the only winner. Carmen Brown of Antioch won the grand prize in this year's K300 raffle, a check for $50,000. She says she won't be spending it all on herself. KYUK's Mark Earhart has more.
Tickets were $25 a piece, or you could get five for $100. Carmen Brown bought 10 tickets, five for herself and five for her boyfriend. Like most people, she said she didn't expect to win. But sure enough, there was her name on the ticket K300 race winner, Roan Boozer, pulled out at the Mushers Banquet January 23rd. It said Carmen Brown of Antioch. It may as well have said Pete Brown, too. Pete was Carmen's uncle who died in October 2009. Brown says she wants to use some of the winnings to help her and her boyfriend get out of debt, but has a bigger purpose for the rest of the money.
A scholarship fund, basically, for kids that want to go to school in the medical field and, you know, search and rescue, EMT, you know, the stuff that my Uncle Pete had a very, very big part of here in Antioch.
Pete was the revered volunteer fire chief of Antioch who started a program called the Dragon Slayers, a group of high school students dedicated to emergency response and fire rescue in the area. The group, which gained national recognition, is still active because of his efforts.
He was a very giving man, very loving man. He cared a lot about the community. He passed on a lot of his knowledge to his family.
Brown says the scholarship fund is still in the planning stages, but she wants the memory of her uncle to live on through it.
You know, we don't want anyone to forget how much effort he put into the health and the, you know, safety of our people in Antioch. And, of course, all over the Kuskokwim. He really loved what he did, and she was the fire chief and EMT chief, so we just want to keep that going.
Brown says the money was given to her by chance, and she wants to do what she can to give it back to the community of Antioch. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Matthew Smith in Nome, Mark Earhart in Bethel, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. And finally this evening, we have the difficult task of telling our longtime colleague and good friend, KSKA's Len Anderson, goodbye and happy retirement. For decades, Len's calm and confident voice has informed and educated us on wide-ranging and important stories from Kotzebue to Fairbanks to Anchorage. We'll miss his respectful treatment of those he has reported on through the years, and his sense of humor kept us on the light side during the stress of deadline. Congratulations on an amazing career, Len, and now it's time to have some fun. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Nominations are due by February 14th.
And by
Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at BBNC. These 2 years. Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.